Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here, you need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice.
Welcome into the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, Jeffrey Wright, kind enough to spend some time. We're going to touch on a number of topics that he and I kind of had a conversation about yesterday. NFL playoffs. We're going to talk a little Kyler Murray. We're going to talk about the Grizzlies, what the Grizzlies should do. A lot of talk in Memphis about is it time finally to kind of break this thing up? Mark Gasol rumored to possibly be on the trading block. We'll get the latest from Jeffrey, get his thoughts there. Also, LeBron James not playing this weekend, not playing until this weekend at the earliest. Jeffrey has a little theory there. We might have a little fun with that. And whatever else might come up, before we get to all that, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal Highway 6 West in Oxford. It's right next door to the Oxford Exxon. We tell you all the time, you can fill up at the Oxford Exxon and then fill up at the Oxford Crystal. It's a football weekend, the NFC, AFC championship games on Sunday. Be a great opportunity to go grab 10 crystals for $6 and pop yourself in front of the TV for the next 6 hours there on Sunday and find out who is headed to Atlanta for Super Bowl 53. They also have the pick any five for $5.55 going right now at Crystal, so you can mix it up, try some different things, make your own combination. Pick five for $5.55. They always have the three-egg plate combo featuring fresh cracked eggs, Gold Peak coffee. And then they, of course, have the $2 square meal, the $3 square meal, the $4 square meal. If you're not in the mood for $5.55, you just want a little snack, you can get that $2 square meal. And if you're in the Oxford area, Landshark Delivery will deliver your crystal to you. So a lot of ways to get crystal to you here on this weekend. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number, ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. No hassle. He takes the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great Ford product, great service after the sale. Corey wants to be your truck guy. He wants to be your car guy. He'll prove it to you. Get a quote if you're in the market for a vehicle. It's at least it's one thing you can do just to get kind of a baseline quote, and you might end up. You probably will end up going right back to Clark Ford, 662-257-1900. And if you tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal, you'll save an additional $500 on your already great deal from Clark Ford. Jeffrey, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How about yourself?
I'm good. So I'm heading up to Memphis today. Actually, I did not even think to check the schedule. I'm flying to Chicago tomorrow with Carson. It's his big Christmas present. We're going to see the Cubs convention. It's going to be a lot different this year because last year everybody was giddy. This year everybody's mad, including my 12-year-old son who wants answers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be fun. I think the irony of Winter Storm Harper going through mm-hmm. Chicago this weekend is absolutely. It's as I get older, I find the new Cub fans very obnoxious, and I for whatever reason, and I can't believe I'm ever saying this. That so many Cubs fans are pissy right now, it for whatever reason, it kind of makes me happy. And I don't know why that is. I've got to be cool with it because my 12-year-old son, who's not his fault that he's 12, he's pretty pissy, and I've got to kind of get myself in order. But anyway, I say all that to say
Jeffrey Wright was right about new Cubs fans better part of 5 years ago.
Yeah, you were. You nailed it. So I didn't look at the schedule. The Bucks are in town in Memphis tonight, which means Giannis Antetokounmpo mm-hmm. is going to be in town. I've never seen him in person.
Quick shout out to you because I got tickets yesterday, and when we talked yesterday, had you said something, I would have graciously given you mine, but now I've already given away. So Section 113 will miss you.
Yeah, I hate that. We're coming up, so we're going to see them. Here's my question. I'm coming back in, I think it's March, early March maybe. I think if the schedule works out, the Thunder are going to be in town, and I'll go see Paul George and Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams and the boys. Mm-hmm. When I see them, is Marc Gasol still going to be in a Grizzlies uniform?
Oh, man. That is quite the question. I actually think there are two questions to ask first for the Grizzlies. So yesterday, I got a DM from a pretty good source that, you know, this person was pretty vague, but basically was saying, hey, big news is coming today. Be on the lookout. And I felt good about it because other people that are reporters for the Grizzlies, they had been getting something similar. And so everyone was kind of trying to figure it out, because the likely scenarios, if it's big news, I actually thought it was only going to be one of two things. It was either going to be you put together the dots of the Mark Stein report that the Grizzlies are expecting Marc Gasol. There are whispers that the Grizzlies are expecting Marc Gasol not to opt in, and they would consider doing a deal. So you kind of have to file that away, because I don't think that was coincidence. Based on Mark Stein's career, he's not someone that just runs with everything he has. So I definitely had that in the back of my mind. So you keep that in mind, and then on top of the fact that you look at the standings and you realize that the Grizzlies, just in November, were at the top of the Western Conference standings, and now they sit second from the bottom in the Western Conference standings. So they're in a weird, weird spot. And I'm not saying it's impossible for the Grizzlies to make the playoffs, but I think it's more than likely that they finish 14th than they finish 8th, and it's significantly more than likely. So you have to keep that in mind. And so then the other possibility was, okay, maybe this is a coaching change, because under normal circumstances, if the Grizzlies haven't been through as many coaches as they have been, and if this front office weren't as responsible for as many coaching changes, you would think at this point, and I'm not saying that I agree with it, but you would think at this point that J.B. Bickerstaff, he would be under review. So you started to consider those two factors as being probably the most likely and the biggest stories and the biggest possible stories where news could come from. And then the day went, and really the only story of the day is that the Grizzlies cut Jarnell Stokes and they were adding another 27-year-old two-way guy. So I don't think that was the news. So I don't know whether or not something fell through yesterday, or I don't know if something's still in the works. But I think, as it pertains to Marc Gasol, here's what's the most interesting. You have to discuss, I think, two questions, and I'm not sure which one you can answer first. The first question is, do we let Marc Gasol walk? And here's why I say you have to ask that question. Right now, it certainly appears that the return for Marc Gasol may not help you long term. And while, yes, I'm always usually of the opinion, if you can get something for an asset, get something rather than nothing. But then that begs the question, are you taking on bad contracts, excess salary that maybe the franchise doesn't want to pay? Because one thing I've noticed about rich people, even though people point out, well, you know, Mark Pera has tons and tons of money. He's got more money than ever. It's like, well, sure, but I've just never met a rich guy that just says, here, have some money. Like, that's just typically not how it works. So it becomes a multifaceted question. Do they want to take on bad assets to maybe get a pick, a future pick later on? And does that trade make more sense to them than perhaps trying to ride out this season with Gasol and Conley, trying to make sure that you finish outside of the top eight, get rid of this obligation that you owe to the Boston Celtics in that a first-round pick? And for those that don't understand, the Grizzlies owe a first-round pick to Boston. This year, it is top 1 through 8 protected, meaning if the Grizzlies finish 1 through 8 in the lottery, the Grizzlies will keep that pick. I believe next year it's top 6 protected, and then the next year I believe it's top 4 or maybe top 2 protected, and then after that, it's an unprotected pick. So The Grizzlies, by most accounts, from those that are plugged in, the Grizzlies would prefer, in an ideal world, to get rid of this obligation to the Celtics and therefore control their own destiny without any fear of repercussions one way or the other. So I think that becomes the most important.
Was that pick in the Jeff Green deal?
Oh, yeah. That was a Jeff Green trade. And, you know, I mean, that is kind of, for all of the problems, what fascinates me the most is how consistently the Grizzlies have not valued picks. Like, even dating back as far as the John Luehr trade, in which they gave up a first-round pick to go get John Luehr as well as Maurice Spates, like, because John Luehr was undervalued. Like, the Grizzlies act like that picks aren't assets, which, as a small market franchise, I think is so patently false that...
It's my problem with Memphis is that you can blame J.B. You can blame him all you want, right? You can say he's not a good coach. You can say he is a good coach. You can say it's all Bickerstaff's fault. You know it's not. Here's the thing. When you're a small market like Memphis that's going to have a difficult time luring the elite free agent to your city, you have to treat the draft as the single most important thing to your franchise every single year. It can't be a throwaway. Unless you're in a really competitive window where a pick is the one thing that gets you that player that you need to make a run at a title.
Sure. And like if you look at the most successful small market franchises, I think right now we'd all agree that probably the two best examples are the Thunder and the Spurs. And they, while the Spurs have had a consistent core, they drafted that core. And if you look at what the Spurs do with their picks, even when they've been title contenders, they've always kept their picks and they've always maximized their picks. And then you look at what the Thunder do. The Thunder are, whether or not maybe they keep their draft picks and make them part of their roster today, that they oftentimes don't do that. But every single pick that they have, they turn into another asset to help their roster. And the Grizzlies consistently do not do that.
Yeah, the Thunder don't bust much. We talked about this yesterday. Spurs don't ever bust. They get their European scouting is just it's elite.
Phenomenal.
And then, yeah, it's phenomenal. And then what the Thunder do is they do a really good job of, you know, Steven Adams with the 12th pick is an impact NBA player. You know, they turned Domantas Sabonis in large part, they turned him into Paul George. They've been able to do a lot of things.
Campaigns.
Yeah, they turned Campaign into Jeremy Grant, who is an NBA starting power forward and not a bad one, actually a pretty good one, and a guy with a real upside, a guy who's begun to emerge. They took Terrence Ferguson in the lottery, but late first round, and they've turned Terrence Ferguson into suddenly a two-way NBA player. They drafted Andre Robertson in the I think they drafted him late first round, and before the horrific knee injury, he was one of the, if not the best perimeter defender in the league. He was one of the two or three best. They've had a lot of success, and it's given them the ability to survive losing Kevin Durant. I mean, they're not a title contender anymore, but they're a playoff team, and they're good, and they're good enough that the fans show up and all of that stuff. Which is what's interesting about Memphis is that it's a very similar market to Oklahoma City. And when the Grizzlies are good, that place is packed and it's fun and it's exciting. When they're not, like any other place, it's not. And so they're at this weird place where they've built so much of their franchise around Mark Gasol and around Mike Conley. And God knows those guys had a hell of a run. They went to a Western Conference Finals. They had several playoff runs that invigorated the city and gave the franchise cachet. There's no question about that. If you unload Gasol today, and there seems to be, and you have a much better finger on the pulse of it than I do, it seems to be that there's a feeling in that city finally that among those who cheer for the Grizzlies that, hey, it's time. It's time to do this. It's time to unload. It's time to rebuild. And I think if you get the PR to that place as a franchise where the fans are willing to sign off on it, and they're mostly willing to sign off on it now because they have this special rookie in Jaren Jackson Jr., who's got a chance to be a superstar. And he's got to take – he's, and you and I talked about this yesterday. It's time, in my opinion, if you're the Grizzlies, to go, okay, these guys had a hell of a run. We're not winning a title with Conley and Gasol. It's not going to happen. We're probably not making the playoffs with Conley and Gasol. We're nowhere near Denver and Houston and probably Oklahoma City and maybe even the Clippers and the Lakers. That's before you even mention the Warriors. We're not there. So the Spurs, we're not there. So it's time. Let's do it. Let's build around Jaren Jackson. Let's let him become the man, which means that initially he's going to take a small step back so that he can take that big leap forward into stardom. I think the city and the fans are ready to embrace that. If I'm the Grizzlies and I have that sentiment among my fan base, I'm getting it done.
Here's why I think it's a very complicated question. I think on paper, I think most people recognize all of that and agree with it. But there's also the sense of, well, why would you let this front office have the opportunity to rebuild this team? You don't have any trust in them to do it from that perspective. So I think there is this weighing both sides. And I actually think it's a very fair question to ask. And then you have another big issue in which, okay, well, if you do tear it down and you try to rebuild with this Grizzlies team and you have the Tigers that appear to be, they certainly have buzz right now around them. Penny Hardaway appears to have it going. For whatever reason, whether or not it's fair, whether or not it's coincidence, it doesn't appear that when the Grizzlies are good, the Tigers can be good. Like, you look at it historically, I don't believe either team has ever made the postseason. There's not been a year where the Grizzlies made the playoffs and the Tigers made the tournament, I don't believe, in the same season. And whether or not that's coincidence or not remains to be seen. But in a market like Memphis, where there's not tons and tons of expendable income, it's certainly a concern. And here it's a bigger concern now more than ever, because I don't think it's any coincidence that Milwaukee chose to build their brand new downtown arena this, you know, and get it going. And it wasn't like the Bradley Center was the shining standard of a crappy arena in the league. It certainly wasn't at the top end, but it was a more than serviceable NBA arena. But the Milwaukee Bucks elected to build the new arena and to ensure that the Bucks were going to be in Milwaukee for the foreseeable future. Seattle has chosen to essentially remodel Key Arena, turn it into a new arena. I think that was somewhat short-sighted. I think they should have probably just, whatever the extra money that was going to be needed to pay to build the extra arena, they should have just done that and build a brand new arena from scratch. But that remains to be seen. The truth is, Seattle's a bigger market, and the thought amongst most owners is, if you're not in a good market, try to move your team to a better market, and that's how you improve the value of your franchise. And the Grizzlies, for legal reasons, at least appear to be here through 2024. But if the Grizzlies are going through this rebuild and no one's in the building, I just think that contracts are meant to be broken at a certain point. So that, sure, I think, will be fascinating. And so you're looking at Seattle. I think the NBA is very, very closely watching what happens in the with the NFL, and they've already seen what can happen to the NHL in Las Vegas. You start to look at that. They've already mentioned expanding perhaps to Mexico City. Obviously, you know, as we've mentioned, Seattle's very much looming on the front. And so the question becomes, can the Grizzlies withstand a rebuild? And in fairness to them, I do understand why there is this idea of, even if we backdoor our way into the 7 or the 8 seed, that is more meaningful to this franchise as a business entity than trying to build a contender. Because unlike the 76ers, who could blow it up, tank, and try to rebuild that way, I'm not sure the Grizzlies as an entity in the city of Memphis can withstand that. So it becomes a fascinating question, because it seems the two most likely candidates to be moved, if the NBA doesn't choose to expand, which it does not appear at this point they have any intention of expanding. They choose, it seems to be, if they're going to enter new markets, it's going to be through relocation. It's the Grizzlies and the Pelicans. And I have no idea what Anthony Davis is going to do. It seems that most plugged in people don't believe that Anthony Davis is going to be a Pelican long term. But I still say, I've said to you consistently, Anthony Davis hasn't had to turn down $225 million or more yet. So if Anthony Davis ends up sticking with New Orleans, I don't see them being the best candidate for relocation. So it's a very, very, very multifaceted, complex dynamic that the Grizzlies are going through right now.
Now, what's Gasol's situation? He can opt out at the end of this year?
So Gasol can actually opt in is the issue. And the thought is, if it's a financial decision, if it's a business decision, more than likely the best money option is going to be to opt in and become a Grizzly again, because no one else, I think, is going to pay him $24, $25 million, whatever it is.
And can't imagine.
Now, the flip side of it would be, well, he may not get the yearly amount of money, but he might be able to go and find 3 years at $60 million or whatnot, three years at, you know, somewhere around that, you know, 4 years, maybe $75 million, whatever it is, and he might elect to do that. There's also the other option that maybe Gasol ends up not opting in, and then he and the Grizzlies work out a longer-term deal in which they maybe they soften some of the cap hit and they make it a more team-friendly deal. But, I mean, I think that's also another big question. It's, you know, what is Gasol going to do? And I don't think anyone knows.
How tied are Gasol and Conley to one another?
Oh, boy. I think in a vacuum, they are tied to one another. But I think now, more than ever, Father Time is rearing its head. You're starting to see Mike Conley being an undersized point guard who's been asked to become a better scoring point guard later in his career. You're starting to see that has started to put some wear on his tires.
And what's his deal? What's his contract deal?
So he is in the third year, I believe, of the deal that he signed, in which he got a max deal right after the CBA with the new television money went in. So I think he signed a five-year deal, and I think he's in year three of it.
There were so many bad deals signed in the wake of that TV deal. When it's really remarkable how many players got money that they would not even come close to getting today.
Oh, and there's no question. And while I don't think anyone begrudges the Conley contract. I mean, obviously the one that everyone's all up in arms about is Parsons and the Parsons deal. And at the time, like, I do think, like, you have to add some context. Like, at the time, most Grizzlies fans were okay with the deal, but they also had one major presumption, and that presumption was, well, he had to have medically been cleared. They wouldn't have given him the money otherwise. When in now that you have the gift of hindsight, you start to hear more and more stories of, hey, a lot of medical people didn't sign off on that knee. And then you have to, of course, ask the big question. Well, if as tight as Parsons was with Mark Cuban wasn't willing to give him anything more than a one-year deal. So why did the Grizzlies risk their entire future for a major medical question mark? It's a fair question, but, man, I don't know. Like, I just think, like, at the end of the day, most people were understood, like, hey, if the Grizzlies were ever going to sign a big free agent, this was how they were going to do it. And they threw a dart, and it didn't hit. Now, was that wise? Was that prudent? I mean, that's the major question. But I don't know. I mean, it's really fascinating because forever we kept hearing, as long as Gasol and Conley are healthy, the Grizzlies are still a playoff team. Well, now we're starting to see. I mean, I don't know if they're at peak physical health, but they've been playing together almost every single game this year, and it's clearly not a playoff team. But the question then becomes, what is the goal for this year? Is the goal to get back into the mix? Is the goal to rebuild? Or is the goal to position yourself to be able to rebuild in the future? And I think that's the biggest question for the Grizzlies. And I think the answer is the biggest goal for the Grizzlies is try to avoid being obligated to the Celtics in the future, because then you can't really control, it makes it muddled. Do you tank? Do you try to win X amount of games? Are you trying to protect a draft pick? There's too many questions. So if you can just get rid of the obligation if he can just get rid of the allegation this year, then you have a clear path forward. You know exactly where you stand. After the summer, you'll know where Gasol stands. Like, you'll have answers to all these questions. But, man,
but it's a loaded draft. I mean, and they could, I mean, not advocating tanking necessarily, but
I mean, I think that's the big problem. I think if they, that's the biggest problem with how they started out, because they started off so hot, they positioned themselves to where I think they won too many games to be able to get into the meat of the draft. I mean, you know, it's all but likely when you look at the standings, the best they could probably finish is sixth, or the, you know, the, if you're saying bad is good, the best they could finish is sixth. And so from that point, you need to get lucky to get in the draft, because it does appear that, you know, there's probably four or five good guys. And then after that, it's just kind of a coin flip. So, and then that, you know, for Grizzlies fans, there's almost this sense that Jaren Jackson fell to them, fell into their lap. It wasn't like they identified him. It was they didn't really have any other choice. So this idea of you put them in the middle of a draft that doesn't have as many NBA-ready top-end guys as last year's draft, do you really want to put this front office in position to, you know, be in charge of that? And so that seems to be a massive, massive, massive source of concern for the fan base.
Yeah, I'm curious tonight, just as we transition off the Grizzlies, I'm curious just to see sort of how Gasol is greeted by fans. You know, he's always been Mr. Grizzly, if you will, he and Conley. I just wonder if the love affair starts to...
Well, I mean, it's just what's a bigger deal is, I think if you trade Gasol, then you have to trade Conley. But Conley's contract is so expensive that you're clearly going to have to take back, like, you know, you can't just say, well, we're going to trade Mike Conley. Like, there's a financial, basically you have to trade a dollar for a dollar on paper. And so who are the Grizzlies going to take back?
They have their assets if they started to tank. I mean, if they, like some people pointed this out on Twitter yesterday, and they're right. I mean, if you traded Gasol today while he still has some value, you could get something for him. It might not be what you envisioned getting 2 years ago, but you'd get something. If you let him break down in the second half of the season, and he's always a risk of that because of his health past, he's going to opt in because the money says opt in. And now you're stuck with him. You're stuck with an aging Mark Gasol when you already have Parsons' ridiculous contract on your books. On everything you said, I agree with, and you know the pulse of Memphis better than I do. I just, if I'm the Grizzlies, I'm terrified to keep these guys right now. And then I have other assets as you get closer to the deadline. You have Garrett Temple, for example. I mean, I could name three or four teams that would line up and give an asset to trade for Garrett Temple to add him to sort of their playoff roster. Maybe a team like Milwaukee, which is in town tonight, would be interested in Gasol and or Conley. I don't know what kind of assets they would have or whatever, but, you know, they have room to take on a contract. And, you know, if I'm Memphis, I'm thinking about doing some deals and getting some expiring contracts and shuttling money off my books at the end of the year. And like I said, I'm building around Jackson, and if I get a pick near the top of the draft, it's a very good draft coming up, and maybe you get lottery lucky. I don't know, you can't count on that, but maybe you're in position to be the fifth or the sixth pick, and you get the third pick. You know, I don't know. I'm just.
It seems to me, and I don't think it's. I mean, for instance, I think oftentimes people think that there's some right decision and then there's some wrong decision, and you and I both know it just doesn't work like that. Essentially, the Grizzlies are trying to pick from a group of bad decisions and trying to determine which is the least bad. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I can actually make a case that having Mark trying to finish the season, win enough games to where you are no longer obligated to Boston, give Boston the 8th, 9th, 10th, whatever, give them that pick, and then... then have, you know, have Gasol walk. As you mentioned, though, that could be a risk because Gasol might say, this is the best financial decision for me, and so I'm going to opt in. But then it maybe at that point you can try to trade him. The biggest question,
and,
right,
and not to interrupt you, but right there, if you're para and you could, if the basketball gods would come down and promise you that scenario, that would be the ideal time to clean house in your front office.
Correct. And so you weathered this storm, and there's the growing sense that the changes will come this summer. But again, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, to me, one of the bigger issues for the Grizzlies moving forward, just beyond dollars and cents and trying to make this all work, the bigger issue that they have is I don't know what direction they are. Like, you know, they tried to modernize with Fizdale and then bring that in. They tried to modernize. They tried to get better, more athletes. They tried to get more three-point shooting. And then they're like, well, that didn't work. So now they've tried to go back to this grit and grind mentality, but they're doing it with lesser players. They're doing it with older players, and there's just kind of an identity crisis. When it worked, it looked great, and then you saw it the first sign of adversity. You know, they're losing games in which they're holding opponents under 100 points, but they're still, you know, they can't break 90, so they're losing games because of that. And so it's just, I don't know, man. The only way I know to say it right now is it's a mess. It's a mess. And I actually think, though, it's not a coincidence. I don't think that this happened overnight. I mean, you and I have watched, it's no different than when you watch a college football program that builds up, makes bad decisions, and they just keep trying to move forward and act like those decisions never happened. Well, at a certain point, that bill comes due and you got to pay it. And I think now we're getting closer and closer to that reality.
This podcast also brought to you by LB's Meat Market. I know Jeffrey's a big fan of LB's. I did a lot of business at LB's over the holidays, and quite honestly, blown away by the, and even though I've been using LB's for years, blown away by just the quality of the product, the quality of the service. Greg Jones and the people there at LB's are just fantastic. LB's Meat Market, Oxford.com is the web address, 662-259-2999. Call that number. Tell Greg what you want. He'll have it ready for you. Or just go in and browse. The marinated half chickens are just fantastic. We always talk about steak. I was in the mood for something different and went in and got some of those marinated half chickens. Absolutely perfect. He has them marinated in different flavors. It's all done for you. You just add a little salt and pepper, put it on the grill, put it in the oven, and it's ready for you. You have to try the sausages, the chicken sausage, the ribeye sausage, the Swayze sausage, which is a pork-based sausage. They're all fantastic. And then, of course, it's the freshest cuts, whether you're getting that bone-in ribeye or you're getting a filet, a strip, whatever the case may be. And then anything else that you want, give him a call. Let him know. He'll have it ready for you, whether it's tri-tip or you want to get a brisket or you're getting a beef tenderloin. It's all fantastic. It's all at LB's, 662-259-2999. It's right across the street from Kroger there on University Avenue in Oxford. This podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Send him an email. It's jlowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. And we're brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency. It works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing, it's all done solely by their staff and created uniquely for their clients. Lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm, so get in touch with them and see just how great they are. Send an email to Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. All right, before we get to your thoughts on the two championship games, real quick, you have a little theory on LeBron James that I kind of checked out a little bit, and you're not alone on this. Well, he hasn't played since Christmas, had a growing injury that night. All the results came back that he was okay, no tear, no nothing. Hadn't played now in going on a month. You think there's more to this than just an injury.
Okay, so you know me well enough. I've never been a conspiracy guy, but I'm always like one good, solid, hard fact away from buying into a conspiracy. Like I'm skeptical by nature, but if you start showing me things, then I can start buying in. So one of the big NBA conspiracies, I think I saw it on Reddit. I'm not trying to pass it off as my own, but one of the big NBA conspiracies that I saw, and I didn't rule it out, and I fell in love with it for two reasons, because the NBA kind of has a history of, they're not quite to the PGA Tour level where the PGA Tour can just say, this person's taking a leave of absence and it, you know, that's the end of it. You know, while Dustin Johnson tested positive for cocaine like 38 times in a calendar year. But the NBA has a history of announcing one thing, you know, say, for instance, the greatest, most marketable player of a generation, perhaps rumored to have lost his dad because of a refusal to pay a gambling debt. Perhaps that story was about to come to light. And then you announce that that guy, because he lost his dad and his dad's love was baseball, you announce that that guy's going to go play Major League Baseball or try to play Major League Baseball, for instance, and he's going to retire for 2 years. For instance, that's just an example I could think of, you know, just pulled it out of the sky. You with me?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. It's no secret LeBron James he's been tampering with Anthony Davis. Like the biggest LeBron stans in the world can try to spin it all they want. Like there's no denying that he has clearly been tampering with trying to get Anthony Davis to the Lakers. Like, so be it. Like, whatever. I can accept that, but they have rules against that. And the latest conspiracy is that LeBron is not hurt, but LeBron was indeed suspended for tampering, but the NBA announced it as an injury.
You know, I'm with you. I'd have to have more before I'd, like, you know, put any money on
it. Right.
But it makes sense. I mean, look, LeBron absolutely tampered with Davis, and LeBron has Rich Paul and all these other people around him who are let's just say that if you did a Venn diagram, the businesses intercede. They cross over. There are conflicts of interest as it pertains to LeBron and some of the things that he's already setting up for himself in his post-NBA career, which I give him credit for. It's smart, you know. I mean, Father Tom's going to catch everybody, apparently not named Tom Brady or Drew Brees. But, you know, there will come a day when LeBron's going to have to do something besides basketball, and he's preparing for that day. It's one of the big reasons he's in Los Angeles. But he didn't go to the Lakers to just play out the rest of his career. He obviously knew things were coming. And he wasn't nearly upset. He wasn't all that upset when Paul George stayed in Oklahoma City. So something else was going on. And if you told me it was kind of people lining up Anthony Davis and then he got a little over anxious with it, I'd buy it. Because he was hoping, I think, that the Pelicans would panic and would trade Anthony Davis this middle of the season while Boston is still sort of tied in with Boston has to rework the Kyrie Irving deal before they can actually and when I say legally, I mean by NBA rules.
Right. Contract, the languages and whatnot.
Yeah, they've got to rework Kyrie's contract, and they can't do that until the season's over. So they're kind of out of the AD market until July 1. So LeBron would love to take advantage of almost this exclusive window and get AD in now. Because let's face it, this guy can talk all he wants about, hey, I don't have to get to the finals every year. When he doesn't get to the finals this year, and he won't, when he doesn't get to the finals this year, it's going to eat him alive. And the Lakers they're going to feel the wrath of LeBron James this offseason. So if you tell me the NBA stepped in and said, hey, you got to cool it. All that stuff you were saying a minute ago about New Orleans and Memphis and markets and stuff, you're exactly right. And the NBA has to be sensitive to that. And the NBA saying to LeBron, you gotta pay a price for this, and we'll let you pay it privately, but you gotta cool it.
I mean, for all the jokes about David Stern, David Stern was actually a champion of small markets because he recognized their importance to the overall league. You got to have teams to fill out a schedule. I mean, there's a reason why when the Kings built their new downtown arena, they have, I believe, a strip of road right in front of the arena that is essentially David Stern Way. And it's because he saved that franchise and kept them there. The jury's still a little out on Adam Silver. He hasn't really been tested yet, but there seems to be some growing thought that Adam Silver might not have orchestrated that Paul George stay in Oklahoma City, but Adam Silver might have, for an analogy that most of this audience would probably understand, Adam Silver might pulled a Greg Sankey in which he was going to make it very difficult. Like, you know, when teams checked into wanting to perhaps hire Hugh Freeze, Greg Sankey was going to make it very difficult to do so, and perhaps Adam Silver did the same thing for Paul George, and the best answer for Paul George was to stay in Oklahoma City. And we're seeing now, like, obviously financially it made sense for Paul George. It wasn't like that they put him in jail and said, here, stay here, and he's having a fantastic season too. But I mean, it stands to reason that Adam Silver, who was David Stern's right-hand man for a significant period of time, it stands to reason that he understands that, hey, these markets and these franchises do matter to the overall league.
Yeah, I mean, not to go down that road too far because we're about to start wrapping up and talk quick football. The Thunder always felt they were at least misled by the league as to what was going to happen with the cap right around the time that they had a young Kevin Durant and a young James Harden and a young Serge Ibaka and a young Russell Westbrook, and they were trying to figure out a way to keep those guys as long as possible. And the cap didn't do what the league had told the Thunder the cap would do, and they made the mistake of trading James Harden, which obviously looks very foolish now. So if you told me that the league helped kind of grease the skids, at least. Now, look, they had to impress George, and he had to like it there, and he had to like playing with Russell, and he had to like Billy Donovan, and he had to like the organization. But once all of those things were in place, if you told me that the league helped push things along that way as almost a little bit of a, hey, we kind of owe you one, I'd buy it. And frankly, it's one of those really good environments in the league. I mean, you go to a game there, it's always sold out. They've been a model franchise in many ways, and the league is incentivized, like you said, to keep those kinds of markets around. The league benefited greatly from LeBron going back to Cleveland and making the Cavaliers a championship caliber program. The arena was packed. The community was very involved. All of those things. There's reasons, like you said. I mean, you want the Knicks and the Lakers and those kind of franchises to be good, but it doesn't kill you when the small market teams are good. I mean, San Antonio is a small market. They've been good for a long time, and that's done nothing but help the NBA.
We got a little bit of breaking news as we're speaking of a franchise in the state of Oklahoma. It is now being reported that Jalen Hurts will transfer to the University of Oklahoma.
Wow. Wow. All right, let's touch on this real quick. Two things. How similar is Jalen Hurts to Kyler Murray? And how much do you think he walks in and sort of allows OU to continue sort of seamlessly with the way that they operated offensively?
Kyler Murray was more similar to Baker Mayfield than Jalen Hurts is to Kyler Murray or either of them. Jalen Hurts is similar to Kyler Murray in that both played high school football in the state of Texas and played the position of quarterback. The similarities end about there, and they were single digits.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyler Murray is a special thrower of the football. He's tremendously accurate. He's got a great deep ball. Jalen Hurts is none of those things. I mean,
right, let me do this. I want to get to two things, and I want to get to it quickly because I don't want to keep you an hour. You've got stuff to do. Two things. One, we haven't touched on this with you on the Oxford Exxon podcast, and if we had, it's just been very briefly. let's say all things are basically even. So okay. I'll make this kind of even, okay?
All right.
Let's say that Kyler Murray discovers through evaluation that he's going to be a late first, early second round NFL pick.
Okay.
And the A's come in and say to him, hey, we can put you on our 40-man roster.
Yep.
Put you on the major league roster. It's going to free us up to even it out where we'll give you, in addition to the $5 million we've already given you, we'll give you another $5 million. To you're not losing money by not going to the NFL. If you're Kyler Murray at that point, what do you do?
I will stand by what I've said all along on this. If I were advising Kyler Murray, I would ask him, which sport do you love? And I would phrase it this way. While I was not good at either, I was a significantly better baseball player than I was football player, but I love football more. And it's not like I have a disdain for baseball. It's just, you know, baseball's a grind, man. And the other thing is I was a catcher, and there's no days. You know what I mean? Like, I like baseball, but I didn't love baseball. I loved football. And for me, my first question is, you have to forget the money. It's going to be tough to be a professional either way. You're going to be a millionaire either way.
Yeah.
So the most important thing for me, if I were advising Murray, is what sport do you love more? Because it's a job. Like, it's a great job. It's a job that millions and millions and millions of people would love to have, but it's a job. And for you to have the most success, you have to really love what you do, because you're going
be happy.
Sure. The truth is there are knocks on you in both sports. And
Is he good enough to be an NFL quarterback? You watch tons of NFL.
I think
you
so.
Love quarterback play. Is he good enough to be an NFL quarterback?
I think so. I think he is a more dynamic Russell Wilson. And at this juncture in his career, he's more accurate and he's a better pure thrower than Russell Wilson. And I think he's very, very capable. Because I think the other thing that everyone's lost of when they focus on quarterbacks' height, man, everyone's in the shotgun 85% of the time anyway. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think the height thing it matters way more, in my opinion, when you're under center 80% of the time. And so now that the college game, I mean, there's a reason why the Cardinals just hired Cliff Kingsbury, and it's not because he's good looking. Like, the college game has very much infiltrated, especially on offense, into NFL schemes. And so this guy has what I think are the two prerequisites to play football at that level. He is remarkably accurate, and he's just got that it, the swagger, whatever you want to call it, the confidence. He's that guy. Does that mean that I think that he'll come in and change the league? No, but I mean, I think, you know, for instance, if you said the Giants at number six could pick between Locke, Murray, and Haskins, I would probably want them to take Murray. Knowing that, hey, it's a risk, but I think Murray has the makings of being a franchise quarterback than the other two.
Can Hurts take advantage of he's got a year at OU. Can he make enough of it to make himself an NFL prospect?
I think it's conceivable. I think Hurts actually did improve some this year. I think Enos...
I thought he was a better passer.
I think Enos really, really helped him, because I think Dan Enos is a very good offensive coordinator. I think he's great with quarterbacks. I think Enos helped him a lot this year. And I think Lincoln Riley appears right now to be somewhat of the quarterback whisperer. So, and now there's not this stigma of if you played in an air raid type offense that you can't be an NFL quarterback. I mean, and so... Yes, I do think that, and I think there'd be some benefit of the doubt if Jalen Hurts goes on and has success in Oklahoma. I think the more success that Baker has in the NFL, and I think if Kyler Murray were to show some flashes next year, if he did indeed play football, I think it would give him the benefit of the doubt, and he would definitely end up being a drafted guy.
All right, last thing. I know you and Chase are going to talk, I think, sometime tomorrow for Friday's podcast, but give me your Give me your real quick thoughts midway through the week on the two championship games in the NFL this weekend.
Man, picking against Brady feels like blasphemy, but you can't ignore the obvious. The last five playoff seasons that we've seen completed, do you know how many teams have played road games and made the Super Bowl?
I'd have to think about it. Not many.
The answer is none.
Wow.
Since 2014, no team in the Super Bowl played a road playoff game. 2015, no team played a road playoff game. 16, 17, 18. And so far, it's kind of holding up. Man, I just don't know. Like, that's the thing. Like, the Chiefs were impressive, but I thought the thing that was the most impressive about what the Chiefs did on Saturday was I didn't particularly think Mahomes was great. I thought he was fine. Like, I don't think he was bad by any stretch of the imagination, but he missed a bunch of throws. He was off a lot, but I mean, they just looked like that they were playing a different level of team than the Colts.
They were really disruptive against the Colts offense. And the Colts offense had been very good second half of the season.
They didn't convert a third down. And then it just felt like when the Chiefs got on offense, the Colts didn't. There was so much misdirection. They were on their heels the entire time. They ran it right at them. Then they took some shots. But, you know, it seems blasphemous to want to go chalk. But if one team is going to upset the other, I do think it'll be the Patriots upsetting the Chiefs, because I think the Patriots can, no matter what the Chiefs will throw at them, I think the Patriots will be more prepared for it than the Colts will. And then on the flip side, when you look at it in the NFC game, like, there's a reason why Peyton and Breeze have never lost in the Dome. And a big aspect for the Rams moving forward is running the football. And, I mean, this isn't breaking news. I'm not trying to wow people with information. But Jared Goff, when his team runs for 120 yards or more, he's 17-0 as a starter. And that stands to reason for the Rams. So much of their offense is predicated on play action, deep shots, and Goff is a great downfield thrower. But when they don't run for 120 yards or more, he's 8-15 as a starter. And the Saints have not allowed a 100-yard rusher since week 11. And you factor that with, at times, the secondary for the Rams. Like, even last week against the Cowboys, I felt like if Dak could have hit a few more passes, like, they could have made that game more interesting, because they had some guys running free, but Dak just really struggles with accuracy consistently throughout the game. He can make throws at given times, but just consistently throughout the course of a game, he struggles with accuracy. And then Drew Brees is the hallmark for accuracy of a passer. And, you know, to me, it just seems like we're headed for, it seems like the most likely will be Saints and Chiefs, but I guess if you made me pick right now, I'd say Saints and Pats. And maybe there's a little wishful thinking, because I do want to see a Breeze-Brady Super Bowl. Like, I think that would be phenomenal, even if they're past their primes, but they're still great players. I want to see a great quarterback matchup. We saw Breeze and Manning. I'd like to see Breeze and Brady.
It'd be a classic for sure. And, you know, that both of them in their 40s, it'd be for guys like me that are still barely hanging on to our 40s, be kind of a proud moment. We could say, see, it's not over.
I mean, yeah, is it a little smoke and mirrors at times? Maybe, sure. But at the end of the day, these guys still put together phenomenal seasons this year.
They keep winning. They put up numbers. They keep putting up W's. They keep winning. It's going to be a fun weekend. Well, listen, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it. Hope to see you soon. And again, thanks, and we'll talk to you later in the week.
My pleasure.
That's Jeffrey Wright, 92.9 FM ESPN. You, if you're in the Memphis market, you should listen to him. He's on with Calkins in the morning, and frankly, he's on throughout the day on that great station, 92.9 FM ESPN. We'll be back next week with another Beer Garden. We'll recap the championship games. We'll talk NBA trade deadline. I'll tell you the latest if I survive Cubs convention. We'll talk some baseball, free agency, and whatever else might come up in the world of sports. For Jeffrey Wright, I'm Neil McCready. That does it for this edition of the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. Talk to you next week. Take care.